Join me in the book of Judges this morning. In fact, make your way to Judges chapter 1. That is going to be familiar territory to the high school class because we have been making our way through Judges all summer long. In fact, if you don't like the lesson, they're to blame for it because it's been our conversations in class that inspired me to share some things I wanted to share with you this morning. So, to kind of lay out where we're going, Judges begins with a terrible blunder, and then the rest of the book sort of maps out the consequences of that blunder. And all of that's given to us up front in chapters 1 and 2. I just want you to notice with that with me as we begin this morning. First of all, the blunder. Judges follows Joshua, where Israel conquers the promised land. And when God sent his people into the land, he told them to drive out all of the people that were there. One of the reasons for that was that this was a judgment on these nations. They had been extraordinarily wicked, and God is going to use Israel to punish them for that wickedness. So the judgment was they were to be driven out of the land, okay? And Israel did a pretty good job with that. In Joshua, we learn how they come into the land, and they essentially take over. And by the time we begin Judges, all that's remaining is sort of the mop-up operation. They need to get rid of the little groups that are still there. And they do a pretty good job with that. If you're in chapter 1, go down to verse number 17. This is Judges 1, verse 17. Then Judah went with Simeon his brother, and they struck the Canaanites living in Zephath and utterly destroyed it. So the name of the city was called Hormah. And Judah took Gaza and its territories and Ashkelon and its territories and Ekron and its territory. Now the Lord was with Judah, and they took possession of the hill country. And you're thinking, great, this is exactly what's supposed to happen. They're supposed to go in and get rid of all of the people, and they're doing that. But you notice I stopped. Right? Because that's not the end of verse 19. There is that but in the middle of the text that says, but they could not drive out the inhabitants of the valley because they had iron chariots. And it's right there that all of this begins to turn because Judah wasn't the only one who did this. If you make your way down to verse 21, but the sons of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites who lived in Jerusalem. So the Jebusites have lived with the sons of Benjamin in Jerusalem to this day. So Benjamin did the same thing. They didn't drive them all out. Now verse 27, but Manasseh did not take possession of Beth Shean and its villages and Tanakh and its villages. And so on the list goes. Look at the end of 27. So the Canaanites persisted living in the land. Now verse 29, Ephraim did not drive out the Canaanites who were living in Gezer. So the Canaanites lived in Gezer among them. So do you see it? They didn't finish the job. They started well, but they still allowed some of the people to remain and underscore, because the writer of Judges does, that the Canaanites, because of this, continued to live among them. And that is going to be the problem in the book of Judges. Jump ahead to chapter 2. And God is going to spell out the consequences of this failure. Are you with me? Chapter 2, verse 1. Now the angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal to Bochim, and he said, I brought you up out of Egypt and led you into the land which I have sworn to your fathers. And I said, I will never break my covenant with you. As for you, you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of the land. You shall tear down their altars. Again, that's sort of rehearsing what God had told them to do. You don't make treaties with these guys. You drive them out. You eradicate them from the land. But you have not obeyed my voice. What is this you have done? God said, you didn't do it. You didn't finish the job. And so, verse 3, the consequences. Therefore, I also said, I will not drive them out before you, but they will become as thorns in your sides, and their gods will be a snare for you. I think that verse 3 is the perfect summary of what follows in the book of Judges. First of all, he says, their gods will become a snare for you. Their gods are a trap. If you leave them, they're going to pull you into their idolatry. And as you go through Judges, that is exactly what happens. The people that lived among them, who worshiped the idols, they influenced Israel. And Israel started worshiping the idols too. But notice God also says that these nations you left behind, they just won't be a snare. They will be as thorns in your side. Because what God will do is he will use these people that remain to punish Israel when they worship their idols. And so folks, that is the story of the book of Judges. The idols became a snare. Israel would pursue that idolatry. And when they did, God would use these nations around them. He would raise them up and they would torment the Israelites until they repented. In fact, that just goes on for generation after generation after generation. In fact, if you've studied Judges before, you probably remember that one of the features of this book is this cycle that Israel repeats over and over again. I hate this clicker. I am pushing the button and nothing's happening. And I see John back there. John, you going to make it move for me? There we go. I knew there was another slide after that. There you go. There's the cycle. If you've studied Judges, you've seen that before. In fact, some clever people actually make all the words in the cycle begin with the same letter, and I didn't think that worked very well, so I didn't do it, okay? But that's the process they go through again and again. Now, to illustrate that, I want to jump ahead to chapter 6. I want to use Gideon's story, because we're going to work this story a little bit this morning, to illustrate the cycle. So we go to chapter 6, verse number 1, where it begins, then the sons of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. And when you read that in Judges, that typically means they started worshiping the idols of their neighbors. So you see, we put sin up there first in red because that's where the cycle begins. The people sin, usually that means they're worshiping idols. And then as a consequence of that, continuing in verse 1, and the Lord gave them into the hands of Midian 7 years. Verse 2, the power of Midian failed against Israel. So again, now God's using these nations, right? It's time he raises up the Midianites. And listen, if you read on down through that context, they're just tormenting Israel. It got so bad that the Israelites are having to hide out in caves. The Midianites would just come in droves and they would steal the produce of their fields, rob them of their crops, and generally just make the Israelites miserable. Chapter 6 and verse 6 says that Israel was brought very low. And when that happens, look at verse 7. Chapter 6 and verse 7. When that happens, the sons of Israel cried to the Lord on account of Midian. So do you see that? They choose sin. That causes the suffering. And when they're in a mess, they cry out to the Lord. Now, by the time we get to Gideon's story, God's had enough of that. Verses 8, 9, and 10, he reminds them, you know, there's a reason you guys keep suffering like this. In verse number 10, he says, I am the Lord. You should not fear the gods of the Amorites in whose land you live, but you have not obeyed me. Listen, you're suffering because you guys keep on disobeying me. And yet, in spite of the fact that they've done this again and again and again, I want you to notice that when they cry out, God again raises up a deliverer. In verse 14, he says to Gideon, go in this your strength and deliver Israel from Midian. Have I not sent you? And so this time God says, Gideon's going to be my man and he's going to deliver my people. And so that's the story of chapter 6. You can walk through chapter 6, chapter 7. God uses Gideon to defeat the Midianites. And so jump ahead to chapter 8. Look down at verse 28. So Midian was subdued. This is chapter 8, verse 28. Midian was subdued before the sons of Israel, and they did not lift up their heads anymore, notice, and the land was undisturbed for 40 years in the days of Gideon. And so we've gone all the way through the cycle. They sin, they suffer, they cry out to God. God raises up a deliverer, this time Gideon. And then finally they get a rest from all the affliction they've been suffering. But jump ahead to chapter 10 now. Get through all of Gideon's story and his son Abimelech's story. Chapter 10, verse 6. Here it is. The sons of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baal and the Ashtaroth. We're going to begin the cycle all over again. And that, brothers and sisters, if you've never studied Judges, you got it in a nutshell right there. That cycle is the story. They repeat it again and again and again. Now, we were talking about Gideon a few weeks ago in Bible class, and as we were discussing it, it dawned on me that the reason the nation experiences the cycle over and over again, think about this, is because individual Israelites and Israelite families are repeating the cycle over and over again. Do you see why that is important? Listen, there were periods where they did very well. After Gideon's conquest, 40 years while he was alive, they were doing really, really good. But then the next generation would come. The kids would grow up. And I wonder, did they grow up not knowing about Jehovah? That's a problem mentioned back in chapter 2 and verse 10 that got all of this started. Kids grow up and they don't know the Lord. Or perhaps the parents had not rehearsed the hard lessons back in the days of Othniel and Ehud and the other judges who went before. Had the parents not gone back and said, look, now this idol stuff, we got to not do that because when we do that, bad thing happens. And it's happened a lot in our history and we need to learn better. Evidently, they didn't get the lesson. And so the kids would grow up. And they would start looking around at what the nations were doing, and they would say, hey, that looks interesting. We ought to give that a try. And so they would get involved in idolatry again. And it wasn't just one or two families, folks, or one or two of the tribes. It was all of them. They would go back to the idolatry. They did it again and again and again. I wonder if they took comfort to the fact, it's not just me that's doing that. Hey, everybody on the block is going to Baal shrine and worshiping there. And so the cycle started again. And so it occurred to me as we're talking in class, this is happening as a nation because each individual family is repeating the cycle from generation to generation. And when I thought about that, there was another thing that dawned on me. My brain kept just running this trail for a while. I wondered, can it happen to us too? Can we get caught up in this same cycle? I mean, Judges is here, brothers and sisters, not just to give us the history. There are lessons that we're meant to learn from this. I don't think we should limit the application just to the people of that day. I think the cycle we see in the Judges, I started thinking about this, is the cycle we may actually see in our own lives. Could it be there? You ever been through a period where you stopped trusting God? And as a result of that, allowed the nations around us, the culture, to lure us in? And so I start getting involved in something I know is wrong. I get involved into sin. Let me ask you, what happens when we go down that path? Well, like Israel, we begin to suffer, right? You know, folks, there's a reason God doesn't want us to sin. It's not as though he's up in heaven looking down and thinking, how could I make life more difficult for my people? Let me give them a rule that will make life tougher. You know, when God looks down on us, folks, what he wants to do is to make it easier for us, to help us avoid trouble. And so when God says something is sinful, he's not depriving us of legitimate pleasure. He's protecting us from things that are going to hurt us. That's what a loving God does. And so when we choose to sin anyway, well, you can count on the fact that almost always suffering is not following far behind. And so we sin and then we begin to suffer. And when we feel the full weight of that, when we become burdened with our sins and it drives us to our knees, what do? We look up. We cry to the Lord, just like they did. I need you to rescue me. Do you know that part of the cycle is always present? Isn't that astonishing that as Israel goes through this again and again and again, you think at some point in the latter part of Judges, when it says they did evil in the sight of the Lord and they began to suffer and they cried out to the Lord, and when you got to that point, God would say, enough. You know how many times I've rescued you people? No. You should have learned. You didn't. I'm done with you. Do you know that God never does that? Every time when his people comes out, call out to him. Now, sometimes like in Gideon's day, he said, look, haven't you guys figured this out yet? We've been through this a lot. But he still raises up Gideon to deliver them. He does it over and over and over again. So I wonder, are we replicating that cycle? And then when he rescues us, we enjoy the rest too. I bet you've experienced that, right? Maybe you've been in a period of your life where you were doing things you shouldn't have been doing and it just became an awful burden to you. And finally you turned back to the Lord and you cried out. And like even that very day, it's like you sleep better, right? There's peace back in your life. But you know sometimes what happens to us? When it's over and we're resting, we start looking around again. I have a good friend who's one of the best soul winners I've ever met. This guy just reaches all kinds of people all the time. And he shared with me one time, he said, you know, I share the gospel with these folks whose lives are in a terrible mess. You know, that's a really good time for people to hear the gospel. When they're driven to their knees by their sin and they're looking up, they're looking for deliverance. And he had talked to a lot of people like that, and he would share with them the message that can get them out of their messes. And he said, I'd share the gospel with these people and they'd respond and they would come to the Lord. And when they would do that, God would rescue them. And he said, after they chose to walk with the Lord, every month life would just get a little better, a little better, a little better, because they're doing the right things now. And he said, you know, a couple of years after doing the right thing, enjoying that period of rest, you know what some of these people do? They start looking back. You know, the Bible has a figure for that, right? 2 Peter. The pig wallowing in the mire doesn't bother me too much because I didn't really have much to do with the pig. But dog turned into his vomit, those are the figures that the Bible used to describe that because it happens. So it's interesting. As we've made our way through these stories in the high school class, I mean, think about it, folks. Every Wednesday, class is the same. It's this. We just change the names. But it's the same cycle over and over again. And I know at some point recently, the kids began to say, when are they going to figure this out? When are they going to figure this out? And I thought that may be the most important question when you study the book of Judges. When am I going to figure this out? How many times must we repeat the cycle? How many more before the lesson will be learned? Before we're done this morning, can I say something to you about that? In fact, what I really wanted to get to today was an opportunity to say something about how to break the cycle. But to do that, I think we need to get underneath it. What's going on that's causing them to do this, that's causing us to do this over and over again? So if you will look at the slide at the top, I have Judges 21:25. It is the last verse in the book of Judges. And probably, if you remember a verse from Judges, it's probably this one. And so at the very end, the writer of Judges says, in those days there was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes. In those days, there was no king in Israel. I don't think that that is really meant to be a statement about the form of government during the period of the judges. In other words, during this book, they had judges, and we're going to get to the Samuels, and then we're going to have kings for a while, right? I don't think that's what he's saying, although that's certainly true. I don't really think this is primarily about government. I think it is a statement about the spiritual condition of the nation. What is the statement meant to say? And during this period, not even God is the king. That's the problem. Not even God is ruling over his people. In fact, if you go back to Gideon's story, the latter part of his story, chapter 8, look down at verse 22. This is Judges 8, verse 22. This is after Gideon has led Israel to defeat the Midianites, and they're really thrilled about that. And in verse 22, the men of Israel said to Gideon, "Rule over us, both you and your son, and also your son's son, for you have delivered us from the hand of Midian." So they said, "Look, we think you should be the king. You did good. We want you to be in charge." And I want you to notice his response in verse 23. But Gideon said to them, "I will not rule over you, nor shall my son rule over you." What's the last thing he says? You see it there? "But the Lord shall rule over you." Not even God was the king. Now, I'm going to get myself in all kinds of trouble right here because I want y'all to hear me on this. This is the problem in America, brothers and sisters. The problem with America today is God is not our king. We need to quit fretting over the outcome of elections and who's going to sit in the White House. Because the truth is, they're all corrupt. The problem with America is not about who's in the White House. The problem with America is God isn't on the throne. Ooh, there's some grumbling when I said that. You with me on this? And here's the deal, brothers and sisters. We have the message to help enthrone God in our country. And rather posting about politics on social media to get your guy in the White House, what we need to do is get the gospel in the hands of lost people. Ooh, some amens. Y'all with me on that? Because we're going to need it for about 18 months coming up. This theme runs throughout the book. In fact, this phrase, "there's no king in Israel," repeated over and over again. But the truth is, every time the text says the sons of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, what that text is saying is they weren't bowing the knee to the king. They didn't obey God. They didn't trust him. One of the reasons I picked Gideon's story is because I just think he's the poster child of the spirit of his age. If you go back to chapter 6 for a minute, we read this earlier, back in chapter 6, when God calls Gideon, "I want you to be my guy to go deliver Israel." I want you to look at verse 13, because this is Gideon's reply to his call. He said, "Oh my Lord, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are all his miracles which our fathers told us about, saying, 'Did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt?'" Watch this. "But now the Lord has abandoned us and given us into the hand of Midian." Wow, there's a guy with great faith, isn't it? Gideon looks at their circumstances and says, "This isn't our fault. This is God's fault. And this is the guy that's going to lead them." But oh, is he a reluctant leader, right? I mean, even right here at this point in the story, he says, "You know, I need a miracle to be sure that you are really speaking to me for God. I need something to confirm that." And in fact, that's the way he is all the way through this story. When it's time to raise the army and go conquer the enemy, again, he said, I need a sign. Remember the whole fleece thing? I want the ground wet, the fleece dry, and then the fleece wet and the ground dry. He needed two miracles to go do it. And a fourth one will be thrown in before he's willing to go and defeat the Midianites. Yes, there was a great victory for Israel. Gideon led it. But I will tell you, it took a lot to get him there. And God supplies it. And what God does for Gideon in this story, he does for Israel in the book. His rescue over and over again when they cry out to him was a demonstration that they could trust him. And yet they did not. And so the cycle would repeat itself. And so these guys in class are beginning to say, are they ever going to learn the lesson? That's a good question. Am I ever going to learn the lesson? How long will we repeat the cycle? Can we be honest about why we do? Can we be honest about why we sin? It is often because God is not our king. We may have decided to follow him, but we have not settled in our heart that we will do what Jesus said when he called us. Deny self and take up the cross and follow. Sometimes I don't want to do it his way. I want to do it my way, or I want to do it their way. I like what's going on with the crowd out in the world, the nations around me. But let's dig deeper, because I don't just think it's that God isn't our king. I think there's a reason God isn't our king. It is because, brothers and sisters, we don't trust him. We've not settled in our heart that the way of the Lord is right. I don't believe that what he wants from me or requires of me or demands from me is really the right thing that will be best for me. If we believed that, we wouldn't go down the road again and sin again and create the mess. So how do we break out of the cycle? I think the answer is that we learn to trust God. And I would add, folks, that he's given us every reason to trust him. Will you think about that? The fact that he is our creator gives us reason to trust him. We've been working in our Sunday night class on the compelling evidence that God exists, that there is a grand creator designer who is out there. But I will tell you, folks, if that is true, if there is a God who made us, what that means is that this being who made me knows me better than I know myself. No one knows better how human beings ought to function than the manufacturer, right? And so we begin with that. God knows better than I do how my life ought to be lived. Do you believe that? But then add to that the fact that God loves us. We could illustrate that in 100 ways this morning, but surely that issue was settled forever at Calvary. Do you agree with that? The love of God once for all settled when he sent the Son to die for my sins. But let me tell you what that means. Not only does God know what is best for me, but that means God always wants what is best for me. Every instruction, every commandment is rooted in his love for me. It will be for my good. I am never going to go wrong when I do it God's way, ever. And if I go on another path, it is not going to work out well for me. And frankly, I think if we will do that, we will see that we can trust God through our lived relationship with him. I'm stealing from Randy when I use that phrase this morning, but I really like it. Do you know what I mean when I say our lived relationship? One of the things that happens to you when you do life God's way, the longer you do that, the more you realize this is the right way to do life. And it's just affirmed day by day, over and over again, in the living of that relationship with him. I can trust him. This is the right way to go. The question this morning is, how long is it going to take me to figure that out? How many times will I have to repeat the cycle and go through the hurt and damage before I will learn that I can trust him? And when I figure that out, to make him my king. When we finished with Gideon, I decided that I desperately wanted to talk about this morning, because I just suspect that there is someone in the crowd for whom this book has to resonate. Maybe you've been living that cycle. Even today, you're in the part of the suffering piece of the cycle and feeling the awful burden that comes when you don't do life God's way. In fact, maybe you're even at that point where you're ready. I need to cry out for help. It's time. Surely there's someone in that crowd, in this crowd, that's somewhere in that process. How long have you been trying it the other way? How's that working out for you? Maybe you've thought about coming back to him, but you've said to yourself, you know, I've done this over and over again. He's tired of me. Not this time. Surely by now he's given up on me. Go read Judges. Every time they cried out to him, God heard them and God helped them. Every time. That piece of the cycle is in every story. And it can be in your story too. I tell you what you need to do. You need to trust him. It's time to say, I know his way is right. And I need to make him my king. I need to bow the knee. Do life his way. You ready to do that? Maybe you made that promise a long time ago and you're not stuck with it. Or you need to make that decision for the first time. More than anything, we want to help you break the cycle. Right now, this day, with the choice you make. If you're ready, make your way down here to this front bench while we stand, while we sing together.
Thank you for participating in today's worship service presented by the Kleinwood Congregation of the Church of Christ. You can listen again to today's service on our website, kleinwood.com.